The issue of what the next president's policies toward Iran might be came up frequently during the recent campaign. Now that election day has passed, well, what happens next? Complicating matters is the fact that Iran will be holding its own presidential elections next year. On today's Underreported, we'll look at what the near future might hold for Iran and how an Obama administration might affect U.S.-Iranian relations. And with me now is Robert Powell, Middle East analyst for The Economist magazine's intelligence unit. Welcome to our show.
Hello.
Have you heard what the reaction to Obama's win has been in Iran?
Well, President Ahmadinejad extended his congratulations and offered some sage advice on governing for the majority. He said that it was repudiation of Bush's policies, and obviously he couldn't approve more. The people itself, obviously, it's very difficult to get anything substantive out of the country, but beyond anything opaque. But it's a very young country, and of course, Obama rode to victory on something of a wave of enthusiasm from the young. And with two-thirds of the population in Iran under 30, you might say it'd be quite an exciting choice. Equally, certain things obviously were not touched upon here. Barack Obama's middle name being Hussein and such like is, again, something that gets people rather excited in a Shia country like Iran, when he was, of course, the martyred son of the founder of the Shia.
Well, I read that the Iranian state television has been calling Barack Obama window dressing, but the LA Times quoted a merchant in Tehran saying, "Let me tell you that now I believe in American democracy. Honestly, I didn't think that Obama would be president. I thought that the invisible hands of the big trusts and cartels would not allow a black man to be president of the United States." It's interesting that they talk that way in Iran, the invisible hands of the big trusts and cartels.
Yeah, it's similar to what Ahmadinejad said himself. It certainly challenged a few prejudices, I imagine. It's nothing's absolutely, of course, straightforward. New faces do not necessarily mean new policies. But it's going to be quite interesting. Of course, it got quite a lot of people excited, not least John McCain, when Barack Obama said he would sit with Iran. In many ways, the whole hoopla about that seemed faintly peculiar, to be honest, because it's not that wildly unusual. The officials in Iraq, the American officials in Iraq, have been meeting their Iranian counterparts until recently on several occasions to talk admittedly solely about Iraq, but it's not anathema to be speaking to Iranian officials. So I think it's in many ways reflects the fact that Ahmadinejad has this bogeyman status over here, and that became a point for political point scoring, I think.
Well, the big issue seemed to be whether you'd sit down with Ahmadinejad without any preconditions, although I don't think Barack Obama actually said that he was going to talk to Ahmadinejad in particular. I wonder if Iranians heard much about John McCain's version of the song Barbara Ann, Bomb, Bomb, Bomb Iran.
Yeah, I don't think it went down especially well. In many ways, they would have certainly have accepted the line that McCain meant more Bush. And again, it is probably rather startling over there to have such radical challenge to your preconceived ideas of what U.S. leadership involves and in many ways what democracy itself is.
But it's still interesting that Iran continues to be a big issue in American politics, and I wonder whether in the Iranian elections, whether the U.S. will be equally big as a source of debate.
It probably won't. The feeling regarding Ahmadinejad is he's having a tough old time at the moment, but it's all largely because of domestic factors, particularly the economy. The country's had this giant oil windfall, and he's been throwing the money around with wild abandon, not unlike an American bank until recently, some would argue. And it's, unfortunately, for the Iranian people, had enormously inflationary consequences.
What, 30% inflation right now?
That's right, yeah. And so, of course, if you give people 20% pay rise, it all looks marvelous, but if your cost of living goes up 30%, you're actually poorer. And he's a stubborn fella, so he's decided that the only answer to this is to throw even more money at the problem, and he's kept interest rates artificially low. And, of course, this was incredibly during the good times. now we have oil prices falling back. As a rough rule of thumb, for every dollar a barrel of oil increases, Iran gets an extra $1 billion. But when it goes the other way, and it's been sharply the other way, it's the economic consequences are really quite horrendous. As you said, an election coming in June, and he was planning on bringing the system where you do direct payouts to the people, but it's going to be extremely difficult for the government to afford this.
My guess is Robert Powell, who is a Middle East analyst for The Economist magazine's intelligence unit. In an odd way, it seems to me that what you're describing is similar to what we've seen in this country. Ahmadinejad got elected initially on values issues, and now his problems are that it's the economy, stupid.
Yeah, yes, and of course the this discussion about foreign policy, and he's become very strident, and he always was, to be honest, with his anti-U.S. rhetoric. He really latched on to the nuclear issue, of course, as a nationalist rally cry. All of that becomes increasingly irrelevant when his actual initial campaign slogan was about using the oil revenue to get bread on the table. Well, the price of basic foodstuffs has galloped higher, and there's been fuel rationing, and so as such, yes, as you say, it's the economy, stupid.
When he won the election in 2005, his main opponent was Hashemi Rafsanjani, mm-hmm. who was more of a reformer, although not in the way we might think of it. To some degree, it was a referendum on right-wing versus more pragmatic reform politics. But recently, Rafsanjani has warned Ahmadinejad to stop with the populist slogans and become more serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's not the only person who's been directing criticism at Ahmadinejad. Rafsanjani will not be standing this time around, but he still retains enormous influence. But there has been considerable criticism from the press, from one of his former interior ministers who has come out saying that the president illegally dipped into the oil stabilization fund, which in many ways is like a piggy bank. When oil revenue is above expected, you put it aside for a rainy day. It appears that the president has been using that money to finance some of his populist measures. He seems to take an almost sadistic pleasure in making his central bank governors as miserable as possible, and he's lost two over the last year, and there's been some pretty hard-hitting resignation speeches. So it's really a cacophony of criticism.
What about the religious fundamentalists who have been his strongest backers in the past?
Yeah, this is very interesting. Yeah, that remains, by the sound of it. He's still actually the man to beat in this election. The political world is very murky in Iran, so everything has to be looked through that prism. But the Ayatollah, the supreme leader, Khamenei, apparently still is backing Ahmadinejad for the election. The Revolutionary Guards still apparently believe that he is their man. And they, many of some have said, local commentators, that can count for a few million votes on its own. So it's going to be a tall order for any challenger at all. In going with precedent, the last three presidents won two terms, which is the maximum allowed, and their second elections were really pretty straightforward.
But also the elections can be rigged to some degree. Many candidates can just be excluded, which means that Ahmadinejad could run pretty much unopposed or not seriously opposed.
Yeah, there was a ream of exclusions in the recent parliamentary elections, and that happened again during the previous presidential elections, but there will be some heavyweights. One person's already come forward, Mehdi Karoubi, who is very much associated with the reformists. But there's a kind of term, a terrible phrase, that the known unknown at the moment is the former president, Khatami, who many would view almost was in charge during sort of the Golden Age. He was in 1997 to 2005. During his period, freedom of expression was opened up, the media, many of the restraints were lifted, Iranian movies became ubiquitous, and he's been talking about coming back. He's a well-respected elder statesman, and I imagine that the person who's come forward so far, Mehdi Karoubi, he would actually stand down if Khatami came forward, that would make it a very competitive election. But it is a big if at the moment.
In quoting that, using that phrase, known unknown, you're quoting Donald Rumsfeld?
Perhaps a little foolhardy.
Ahmadinejad suffered a setback just this past Tuesday when the parliament voted to dismiss one of his top ministers, the interior minister, Ali Khordan. How big a blow is that to Ahmadinejad?
It's substantial, and it's also just enormously embarrassing. The interior minister would actually play a large role in overseeing the elections, just because it's his job. And so kind of getting his man in would have been extremely helpful for him, and Parliament's kicked that out. But it's also enormously embarrassing because it was all aired live. This is someone who the president obviously chose, and it turns out that his university degree was in fact forged. This is why he was removed. It turns out he'd put forward a false CV. There was also talk that he tried to bribe some parliamentarians, not Ahmadinejad, but the removed minister, and he tried to bribe some parliamentarians as well in order to get himself ratified. So it makes it extremely uncomfortable.
But are we seeing a rebellion in the parliament? Because the Times reported yesterday that it also plans to investigate Ahmadinejad's trip to Iran's provinces because they cost too much money and haven't helped him deliver any of his promises.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been more serious rebellions before, of course. But he's rather brought this upon himself. He's treated Parliament, really, since he came into power with, really, at best indifference, at worst contempt, and has often tried to ride roughshod when they've attempted to either adjust his legislation or veto some of his appointments, as we had this week. So as for Parliament, it's angry, but there's a limit to what it can and will do, especially, and this has to be stressed, especially the Supreme Leader, still seems to be, at least for now, firmly behind the president.
You did say that one of the big problems is that oil prices have fallen a lot more than anybody could have expected. Can he be blamed for not putting a little cushion together to protect the country in case of something like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of the very serious charges against him. On the one hand, spending huge amounts of money has in many ways shored up his popular base among the poorer elements of society. But now the times are a lot tougher. People are wondering why the Oil Stabilization Fund, which I mentioned before, which is a rainy day fund, has been plundered when oil prices were hitting record highs. The charge of incompetence is one that is regularly heard around the streets, and it's one that might stick if unless there's a rapid reversal of the oil price and starts heading northwards again.
He's also been hospitalized for an illness, and he told the press that a lot more was made of it than should have.
Mm-hmm. It does appear that the official line was that he was just simply exhausted. And actually, if you looked at any pictures of the president around that time, he did look quite terrible. He seems to be a young gentleman in good health. It does not appear to be anything beyond that, but I guess he works apparently almost lunatic hours, very little sleep, and when he's being bombarded with criticism in an economic situation that's deteriorating around him, then perhaps stress is inevitable.
We have very little time. Does he really the power that Obama has to deal with? Tell me in 10 seconds.
Not really. The clerics hold the power. So if there's going to be a fundamental change of policy, a rapprochement with the U.S., then it will have to come from the very top, from the Supreme
Court. Thank you, Robert Powell of The Economist.